Welcome to the ITU AI for Good conference in Geneva. We are live here at this amazing conference. We are thrilled to be having Dr. Kathleen Kramer, who is the president and CEO for IEEE. She brings an incredible background of not just academic excellence, but also practical insights. She's been a professor of electrical engineering at the University in San Diego, as well as she's had tremendous experience working with Viasat, Hewlett-Packard, and many other organizations. So we are truly lucky to get that balance of how academics and practical experience is going to, we're going to talk about transformation that's happening in the workforce and talent, et cetera. President, welcome to the Regulating AI podcast.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here, Sanjay.
Great. We are at a very pivotal moment in AI. Well, I think we said that last year. We might say that again this year. But again, for our listeners who are global, what does responsible AI mean to you as a president of the world's largest technical organization?
So everybody agrees it's like world peace. We're all in favor of it. And the difficulty is defining what we mean by that, and at the same time, allowing the future to happen. And so we're at IEEE. We have been working, at least I've been personally involved since 2017, and I think before that, but long before it became the coolest thing in town, we've been working on that. And we see it as we're devoted to transparency, privacy, and concern with human interaction. And so we can provide frameworks for that, but in the end, Your AI is not going to do adjudication for you. It's not going to punish people for you. It's not. People act in their individual interests, and so our notion is to form communities and to provide accepted standards.
Provide communities and provide standards, as you said. Different people have different definitions, but President, IEEE has been ahead of its time. You got almost 100 such AI standards. Now you've got a certification program which really focuses on algorithmic bias and transparency, etc. How does this, talk to our listeners, what does that certification mean and what does it mean for the workforce in your view?
Well, so there has been, along with the AI and similar innovations, transformations. It's hard for education to get education versus training. We could debate all day the difference between education and training. It's hard for education to catch up with that. And so to have meaningful, so what does it mean if I tell you I have a master's degree in AI? What does that mean? It literally means nothing. And so to have,
well, to all the people who have master's degrees in AI, Dr. Kramer,
I've told you that it means nothing, because it literally means nothing. So anyone, any institution can put up a sign that says master's degree, and you can name a degree program anything you want in most countries. And so, what does it mean? And so certification provides some reassurance, a level of quality. And that's what certification, accreditation, efforts along those lines, that's the important point of them, is to have a meaningful credential rather than a credential that has literally no meaning. Yes, sorry.
No, but you raise a very important point, President. If I may just follow up on that. MBA or NMS or take some of those degrees now are codified standards of what we do.
Exactly. And so one of my qualifications and my background is I'm actually a fellow for an organization called ABET. And ABET accredits literally several hundred programs worldwide in, I think it's about 80 countries. Okay. And then we have something called the Washington Accord that covers several other major sources. And for certain types of degrees, say electronics engineering, computer engineering, there's a meaning to mm-hmm. what it means.
Right.
That in order to call yourself that and to say that you're accredited. Whereas these newer emerging technologies, it can be very appealing to have a degree, and particularly graduate degrees. So an MBA, for example, they have an accreditation body, and there is the highest level of MBA accreditation body. And you can tell whether or not it's in the club or not in the club. Whereas in general, master's degree today can mean many, many different things.
Many, many different things. We have listeners who hear about $100 million packages for people who have these AI skills. Are you saying that we need some form of accreditation for the master's in AI?
I'm saying that the state of the art today is that that doesn't exist.
Okay.
And so the appeal of the great, so there is great demand and great opportunity for real experts. But how do you know an expert from a non-expert? And then particularly, and it happens more so than not, with computer-affiliated fields, mm-hmm. that you're told, you know, you can do this virtually. You
right.
can do this online.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to provide quality. And so our certification is not a degree. And so we're genuinely, our entire focus is advancing technology for humanity. And so that's all we're doing it for. And so education has been one of our major emphases from the beginning. And we're 141 years old this year. Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, Nikola Tesla was in our first class of fellows. And so we're really interested in helping advance technology. And so part of that, part of the keys to the kingdom is education. That's why you're asking me about it.
So do you think with your background, you said, you know, you work with Abed, you're obviously
yes.
teaching and now the president of this 141-year-old organization.
Yeah, 500,000 members in 190 countries.
500,000 mm-hmm. members in 190 countries.
Among some people, I'm very well known.
Of course, of course. And there are people who in our audience who know you or will know you now.
Yeah.
Should there be changes in the education curriculum? You kind of are talking about that.
Yes.
Because this is truly transformative technology.
Yeah, actually, I completely, that's a very true statement. And there is a fundamental, there are fundamental changes coming. And there's this tension that true education, as opposed to training,
mm-hmm.
true education really is not a big money-making endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking to help the learner to learn and to be successful, that's not that's not the way to great wealth and riches for the provider of the education. For it certainly can be the keys to the kingdom for the individual who wants to be a technical contributor. We've had, education has really suffered. I think COVID in many ways knocked down, it brought in a future, but it was in many ways a very dark future. And so to force almost everyone to go virtual in education when the technology just wasn't there to provide that quality. And then the grit, sort of the personal personal resilience to learn how to learn when it's hard to learn is a very difficult thing. And the reaction to COVID changed approaches, and it made many things distance or virtual learning. But the argument being that it can be just the same. All you need is the lecture notes, and all we need is someone on video presenting. And you need that interaction. You need that commitment. You need that modeling. And so definitely IEEE on many fronts. I wrote an article that appeared this month. We have a magazine called IEEE Spectrum that reaches our 500,000 and more. And I encourage your listeners to take a look for one IEEE for education. Do a search on that.
Of course. So I think you made some great points, President. You had a recent survey in terms of the skills that are most desirable for AI.
Yes.
What struck me, President, is that the second largest skill that was required was ethical skills, which came in at 35%. Number one was software development. Why is ethics, AI ethics, such a hot issue, or should it be a hot issue?
Well, I think it's definitely a hot issue. It's certainly a hot issue here at AI for Good.
Of course.
But I think it's a lot harder than it seems. I think for some people, it seems like an easy thing to understand. I think AI is difficult to understand. It's not, it makes hard things simpler for the user, but for the developer, I think it's more difficult. That's these jobs that you mentioned that are so lucrative and so promising, they're not looking for the gentleman that spent 20 minutes on the internet watching a few videos. They're looking for genuine expertise that's difficult. And so ethics is one of those things, like I mentioned, the world peace example. It's one of those things we all agree that ethics is important.
Right.
And so the question on ethics, and IEEE, people aren't aware of this, but we essentially invented engineering ethics with the first engineering ethics code, I think it was 1912. And engineering ethics is founded on the fundamental principle of your responsibility to the public and the responsibility to have genuine expertise, that what you're selling as an engineer is your knowledge, that people can trust in your knowledge. And that's today, when you bring up our credentialing and the AI, you see exactly that coming forth. And so this is the fundamental principle. Computer ethics, which it's not that computer technologists are less ethical than engineers, but computer ethics is on the principle of privacy and property. Not that it wasn't conceived when they first started working with computing and software, it was not conceived that lives are at stake in the same way that building a bridge, it's obvious that lives are at stake.
Right.
Yeah.
President, there have been conversations, different people have come out, different organizations. In fact, recently the head of Anthropic, which is a big foundation company, talked about large number of white collar jobs that will get displaced because of this technology. You have come out in saying that there will be transformation, but newer jobs will be created.
Yes.
For our listeners who are very concerned in terms of this, and we all agree there is a transformation,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes. We absolutely agree.
But you're saying newer jobs will be created. Explain what do you mean? What did you mean by that?
Well, the transformation is coming, and the transformation is here. I see it as, you know, if you go back even 15 years ago, so pre-AI, everybody looked around and said the transformation is here because companies no longer were your company. So you mentioned, oh, you worked at Viasat, you worked at Hewlett Packard, you worked at, I don't know what was on your list. I also worked at Northern Telecom. I also worked at TRW. Of that list, they're not all still here. And you don't have the opportunity, even a highly qualified, really smart person, and in even no matter what country you're in, you don't have that opportunity to graduate, and now you have a job for the next 50 years until you retire. You have to be ready that you are in demand and turning down opportunities because you've developed your expertise, and that's an individual responsibility to maintain. No matter, we have many companies that are very ethical, and they care about their employees, but in the end, they're operating for profit as a business, and their first loyalty is to that business. And it's not necessarily making you a more valuable person to be stolen by another company. And so who is responsible for the next you, that if in 6 months, the company that you're with, their technology just doesn't pan out and doesn't have a market, where will you be? And so who needs to care about that? And so at IEEE, we care. And so we see it as we're the professional home for our members. And so we have, you know, different areas of emphasis. And I see AI jobs as being that way. I see jobs in technology as being that way, that, you know, what you're so expert at today, if it's just a list of very specific skills that only fit this one product, that's not a, you're not building a great future with that. And so we have to look beyond that. And I think the same thing applies to AI, except AI is, yes, it's going to replace, let's say, your low-level programmer. There won't be, nobody wants the programmer that really can't program anymore, the one who was kind of getting by copying everybody else or looking for libraries. That's my weaker students, no offense. my weaker students, when you give them a programming assignment, you'll end up getting work that they found in some library that was posted somewhere
in
of
GitHub.
Coding and wherever it came from, and BitHub or et cetera. And they'll say, well, I solved the problem. Like, you asked me to do, you know, whatever task I asked to do, and it's like, you're missing the point. You need to be able, if you can't contribute on your own, if you can only copy, you're not a valuable person in the long term.
So for the young people who are starting out a career,
yes.
What skills would you emphasize for them to take advantage of this positive transformation? Because there's people are afraid of the...
It's up to you to make it positive, yeah.
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 But what skills should they be emphasizing? It used to be saying STEM for
right.
several decades. Is that still true?
I gave a keynote, actually, for the... WYSIWYS, just yesterday morning, three minutes, and I mentioned this, and I was given in my talking points to say STEM is so important. And STEM, yes, STEM as a category is important, but I definitely, you need quality in STEM. And so that's what, circling back to what we said earlier, degrees need to mean something. And so given that your specific technical skills, so programming in COBOL, which doesn't exist anymore, what can you do from that? How do you learn how to do it? So I go back to first principles. I was a double major in physics.
Wow.
And why was I a double major in physics? It's never done me any good, except I can brag that I was a double major in physics, which is, that's useful, I suppose.
Of course.
But... it reflects a mindset, and I see it as a mindset, an innovation mindset. And so we're not just about, so copying, like, so yes, we use the term leverage. So you want to be able to leverage what's valuable, but to be able to have the discernment to see what's valuable, first principles. So look for the harder classes, the ones that people say are harder. That's the easier ones. You can do that on the video. That's not the time is our only zero sum game in life, and so you only have limited time. They'll kick you out of school even if you want to stay in school. And so pick the hard things that you can't learn by yourself, that you can get the opportunity to work with really smart people and be part of the smart people club.
Pick the hard things. That's what the president is saying. President, we talked about transformation. IEEE is playing a key role. Do you think government has a role in this with weather policies? Because this is major, major, major transformation.
By definition, people don't realize this. So it's if someone's not involved in policy at all, and of course, I guess maybe all your listeners are super policy wonks, so good for them. But for your average person, and I think it relates to your question earlier about AI ethics and that interest in ethics. For your average person, they like the idea of ethics. Mm-hmm. They like the idea of policy. But real policy is more than an idea. Mm-hmm. And you have, it isn't policy if you don't have government. And so this is a difficult tightrope to walk. And in particular, we've had a significant effort in IEEE. So in the United States, a couple months ago, we had Congressional Visits Day. Mm-hmm. And every year for the last few years, there's been a significant increase in the participation in that. And what IEEE will do is we'll train the people that come to, they sign up to participate, and it's free. And so we'll train them in what are the policy issues that are most important, that we see as most important. But in the end, what can you advocate for on policy, but what you're passionate about? So these IEEE members are not our lobbyists. We're helping connect them to policy awareness. And we have, I don't want to say the wrong number, but I'll say 12. Sorry. we have 12 different policy committees with about 300 volunteers that are working on particular policy interests, including an AI policy group. But and so sometimes people from, say, Australia might say, well, Australia is not in the United States policy group, because you and I know it's not policy. Yeah. Then that's an interested group.
That's true.
Yeah. So we have policy activities, and we just created last year the Global Policy Caucus. And then we use the term caucus deliberately. We had the Global Policy Committee. I'm forgetting there were two C's, the Global Policy Committee. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, but it's a contradiction in terms, mm-hmm. if you will. And so they were like sitting around saying no to people, because everybody can veto everybody else.
Yeah.
As you see, you know, the United Nations kind of thing.
That's
and
true.
So by having a caucus, we can bring together people that are separately doing policy and help encourage others. And so this is an exciting event for us. And so it just, we started on this journey this year.
That's true.
Yeah.
President, you've seen some transformations happen in your career.
Yes.
Whether you look at internet, whether you look at mobile technology, cloud, and so many others.
That I admit to being past 29.
No, okay. Of course not. Let's just put it this way. You've heard about other transformations that have happened.
Yeah.
How does this compare, or does this feel different than the other ones? This is a question we get a lot.
Well, I definitely see it as like a major benchmark, for lack of a better term, to come to my mind. And so way back when I was negative something, you could see that computer and communication were coming together.
Right.
And then in the early 2000s, you could see that this internet and eventually the cloud was really coming together and changing things. And there was a dramatic change in jobs, where from a technologist's point of view, where it went from the hardware emphasis to the software emphasis. And companies like Viasat, I'll pick on Viasat. Let me pick another company. So other companies... would say, I have to be honest with you, and this was before I was a president, so I have to be honest with you, Kathleen, 90% of our recent hires were in software. And so then our people, or my technology people, they respond to the demand by you end up driving more and more and more to head over to software type majors, computer science, etc. Last couple years, I've been seeing it coming.
Yeah.
And AI has had the effect a major effect of changing the demand in a negative way in softwares, in terms of the effect on the demand. And so there's all these graduates, and some of whom are thinking, oh, if only my degree said AI on it, that would make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. No. It's a difficult skill to acquire, and quick computing skills don't prepare you to develop new work in AI. So it's definitely a challenge, and I agree with you that this is a major change. It's changing technology in major ways. Most significantly, I would say, in the autonomous realm. Mm-hmm. And some of my work is in the aerospace realm, and there's a real difference of culture that we're willing to tolerate accidents in autonomous cars, but we're not willing to tolerate accidents in aerospace realm.
Yep.
And this culture of safety, it's sort of who's driving the bus, the ethics of computing or the ethics of engineering. And obviously we want those to come together.
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Finally, for our audience, what is your vision for IEEE for 2030 moving forward?
Well, in the end, we see ourselves as a trusted source. Mm-hmm. And so the trusted source for technology, and literally the tagline that I've mentioned, advancing technology for humanity. Mm-hmm. So we are a public charity. And so we're a public charity that's also the fifth largest publisher in the world. Mm-hmm. And we organize, I believe it last year it was 2,360 conferences. And so I don't go to all of them. And each of those conferences has its own community. And so it's a challenge to have communities of particular technical interest and to really move the world forward with technology. So there's the technology impact on humanity, and then there's our ability to advance technology in a positive way, such as AI for good.
Excellent. Well, that's a great, great segue. Since I'm having so much fun, I'm just going to ask you for a one-word answer on a couple of things.
Okay.
Put you a little on the spot, President.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. AGI, or super intelligent, whatever the term is it a decade or decades away?
When you say, define that word for me.
Which one?
ETI?
No, AGI.
Oh, AGI, yes. Meaning automatic.
Well, artificial general intelligence.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I think I could argue never, but all right. I think that it's not as close as people would like to say. I'll be a pessimist, but in some ways an optimist, if you will.
Okay.
So I see the value of the human. And in the end, I think that there is an ultimate value for the human. Amongst my aerospace people, we see it as a never.
Okay.
And so definitely we have robo taxi cabs now, but in terms of like the true human, we're nowhere near that point yet.
Next one up is the biggest impact of AI. Will it be in healthcare or education? Pick one.
Oh, definitely healthcare.
Okay.
And so in education, it's been misused.
Okay.
And there's a look for easy answers when, like I mentioned earlier, it's grit and resilience and understanding that you need to have trial and error and efforts and to hang in there and expect to fail and do the hard things. AI has been largely applied in education. Like we're gonna, and it's actually listed as the grand challenges of engineering. We're gonna have personalized learning. We're gonna teach you only what you need to know. We're gonna cater it. It's not up to you to change yourself and make that effort. We just need to find the perfect learning. No. Whereas on healthcare, we've had there have been vast amounts of money spent on medical research.
Mm-hmm.
But on meaningful healthcare outcomes, we have been completely lacking in a scientific mind. Mm-hmm. And I'm pointing at you, public health policy people.
Okay. Just as a follow-on, even though I said one word, are you against personalized education? Because that's the big thing in AI, that every student is different. Why should they all be taught the same things in the classes?
I would say I'm less in favor of that.
Okay.
Than you would expect. I guess it would be an unexpected answer. I think that that's a very appealing notion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain appealing notions that have unintended, very negative consequences. And in particular, the notion that, well, I'm just not good at this. And so you need to adjust it to me. And we've seen this in, but pre-AI, you've seen this in a lot of ways that, I can't do this, so you need to change it for me. I can't do that, so you need to change it for me. And there's a limited amount of change it for you that should happen. And I think there should be an effort. There should be an expectation of effort. And so, yes, there's people that need personalized accommodations, for example. But in the end, you need to be a strong contributor that's able to learn on their own, not just get a check mark that says, you're special. We're going to just check it for you, or set the bar so low that it's impossible not to be successful. I have such a big organization that a lot of times we always have, what are your metrics? And so people have learned, unfortunately, that they have a slide called metrics, but they don't necessarily have metrics that are meaningful. And sometimes I will point that out. Well, you have this slide called metrics, but if you look at it from what would be your sign that this is not successful and that you should pivot and try something else, you've set it up so that you don't want to fail, so that you can't fail. So how are you going to learn and do better and improve and innovate?
That's pretty helpful. President, is AI going to be a job killer or a job creator?
It'll certainly kill some. And in the end, we'll have, you saw this with every major technological jump advancement. You saw that a whole bunch of jobs, so we don't have many jobs for people working with horses. Mm-hmm. And nowadays there's certainly mechanics, but it's a much more limited opportunity than it used to be. And so, yes, There will be jobs that will be eliminated, and particularly sort of auto quick, the copy and paste type jobs. I just came up with that. I agree with, the copy and paste type jobs, but that just makes it more necessary to be able to do the hard stuff and to be able to learn the hard stuff on your own. Yeah.
She does not like Control C, Control V.
If you've not
figured that out, finally, open source or closed source? I'm talking AI now.
Yeah. So I'm big on open source, but closed source. So if you're open source, you involve a lot of people, and so that's just kind of the nature of IEEE, is to be pro open source. On the other hand, If people should be allowed to not be open source, and if they want to do their thing, some of the greatest innovations are done with your own personal motivation and in a capitalist mindset. And I'm all for that too.
Well, President, thank you so much. This has been an amazing insight to our listeners. Talking about education, the changes in workforce in terms of what people need to be motivated. Thank you for being on the Regulating AI podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it, Sanjay.
At the ITU AI for Good Summit in Geneva, live here. Thank you so much.